Welcome back. So did anyone have the chance to experience any welcoming practice during our break? Yeah, I did.
We tried talking politics, but we agreed.
Good. Any questions that kind of came up?
So, Mary, I want to follow up on Robert's comment. And so my question to you, it has to do with Robert talked about a cruel person. And what does a person do who is in an abusive relationship? Let's just make an example, a man and a wife and a husband, and he beats her. So how does welcoming prayer work in that context?
Nestor, that's a great question, because my fear in sharing it is that people think this is a passive practice that you sit back and take. You don't. Actually, it's an incredibly courageous practice. The difference is I don't have to fight back out of violence. There's a saying in some of the rooms that I love particularly. It's say what you mean what you say, but don't say it meanly. I did a lot of work with parenting. And what I realized was there was this whole stage where the women were coming in and the kids weren't listening. And the dad would say something and the kids stopped. But you know what? He meant it and she didn't. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, if you don't stop that right now, well, she was probably also busy cooking dinner and all of that, so whatever she threatened didn't happen. Where he said, stop it now, and he meant it, and if you didn't, you got whatever. Welcoming is never to be a vehicle to, in any sense, enable or allow abusive situations. What I have found with those is when we really claim our power and say, stop it, it stops. Welcoming's incredibly enabling of the power to claim no. Your no is probably the most underused word in your vocabulary. And it's critical. How can my yes have any merit if I don't have a no? And at least for women, I'll speak from my experience, Christian women have a double whammy, don't we? Oh God, you're not only supposed to not say no, but you're supposed to be happy about it. You know? So try it with a smile. The truth is, if we can say no, then we can truly say yes, and it means something. So in that situation, first of all, if somebody's hitting you, get the hell out. And I hope there's a lot of good resources for that here, and safe houses and all the rest. But even if it's just emotional abuse or somebody in your life is, and quite honestly, lots of times it's adult children that are abusive. Or the elderly, you know, there's lots of different types. But when I'm really true to the God within, I'm not meant to be abused, and you're not meant to be abused. And you say enough. It's very empowering. But let's go back to that, sorry, I moved my books, that wonderful little quote, because this is a very big quote. On the brink of each new breakthrough, there is a crisis of trust and of love. Let me read that again. Surrender to the unknown marks the great transitions of the spiritual journey. So to think that it's going to feel comfortable is the mistake. Remember when you were a kid and you did some of those things like you fell backwards with your arms and you hoped that you'd be caught by your friends because you were practicing? That's what it feels like. The inner experience is that it's not trustable, that you're not loved, and that it's not redeemed. But that's just a feeling. What you're being asked to do is stand in the truth of what you claim, that you are loved, you claim your core of basic goodness, and you claim God's power in the situation. But your experience might be that this is untrustable, unlovable, and very scary. But you say enough or no or stop. And you may not have any of the answers around it. That's what I mean. Welcoming takes me by surprise because, okay, follow me. It's really very clear, and I hope I can communicate it clearly. What we're dealing with is unconscious material. My brain and your brain probably says that if I read the right book or go to the right lecture or see the right DVD, I'll figure it out. That's not how unconsciousness is healed. It's through that breakthrough of insight and doing something different. So it's the first time that you claim your voice. It's the first time you step out in your truth. And it feels scary and uncertain because it's new territory. You know, you've all heard in the rooms we say a lot, no change, no change. Or Einstein's definition of insanity is to keep doing the same thing and expecting different results. But we want to keep doing the same thing because we're comfortable with it, folks. Isn't that it? Yeah. But I like this. I might be miserable, but I like it. It's my misery. I know the boundaries. I know what happens. I could tell you what'll happen tomorrow. When you start to step out, you don't know. The cloud of unknowing. What's being unwrapped are all those things we thought we knew. Even what we think we know about God gets undone. Thank God, because a lot of the stuff we have about God needs to get undone. But it's not meant to be abusive or to allow you to put up with abuse. But you don't have to react in the violence. Under the false self, when I react, all I get back is the reaction, don't you? If you feel, you know, have you ever walked into a room where two people were arguing, but they heard you coming, so they were quiet? You feel it, don't you? Boy, you could, what do you say? You could cut the tension in the air. We think that we're so smart we can pull it over on anybody. We can't. Our truth we transmit. It really comes out of our pores at a cellular level. You know, this is why welcoming really helps, because you work with the body. In communications theory, if you have something big to say, you want to have a talk with somebody you love, or you're concerned about someone, or it can be good, bad, or indifferent, but you really... What do we usually spend all our time on?
Thinking about what we're going to say.
What are we going to say, right? What are we going to say? In communications theory, out of 100% of what you're going to communicate, what percentage do the words account for?
Five, maybe.
Seven.
Close.
Isn't that something? Have you ever had it where somebody who loves you says something really bad, but you knew what they meant? Because it's not about the words. It's 30, I'll forget it right now, but it's like 33%, let's say, is tone of voice. But 60%+ is body language. Has anybody ever apologized to you? I'm sorry. You know how you say it to little kids, like, go up and tell them they're sorry. And they walk up like this, and they stand there, and they say, I'm sorry. And they're not sorry a bit. And we have it as adults, don't we? We couch it a little better. Well, I'm very sorry that you thought I was obnoxious. Why'd you think that? You know what I mean? We do that because it's the words. What I love about welcoming and centering prayer, because centering prayer is bringing it up, is it starts to change the real stuff. That you communicate and I communicate without even knowing we're communicating it. Thomas Keating says, if we're in divine union, you don't even have to open your mouth. Walking down the street, you're transmitting divine love into the world. You become the vehicle and the vessel of it. But it's not about you. So you don't have to get all, I have to have these great words, or how am I going to convert so-and-so? Or, and I'm sure some of you came here today and thought, I know who should be here. Didn't you? Didn't you have that? Like, how am I going to get so-and-so to do this practice? It's not about them. It's being it ourselves and allowing God to work in us, that we give others permission to be themselves and let God work in them. This very tiny little practice that starts with being real enough to experience your own experience in the moment. To welcome it, knowing that God is always present and active. De Quisade says, God is always present and active in every circumstance in the most faultless ways. He says at the end of it, the realization that God is active in all that happens in every moment is the deepest kind of knowledge we can have in this life of things with God. He goes on to talk about it. And what I love is, if you read Eckhart Tolle today, he uses the same words. And the one word they talk about both use from the 17th century and from the 20th and 21st century is at ease. So here's my litmus test for myself. How much of your day do you consider yourself at ease? It's scary to me. To be at ease in the moment with God, no matter what you're doing. Remember Mary and Martha? Martha lost herself in the moment. So it's coming back to being at ease in whatever the situation is calling on you for. De Quisade says, it is peace, joy, love, and a feeling of being at ease with God, who is seen and known, or rather, believed to be present and always active in the most faultless way in every happening. Really difficult stuff happens. Mary Murzowski used to say, it's never about what's happening. It's about what we're doing with what's happening. Does what's happening bring you closer to God, to the living realization that God is present and active and alive now, here? Or does it take us away and into our own preconceived ideas of how it should be or shouldn't be? So that's how welcoming is at the hands of bringing us closer. So let's take a moment. Hopefully, you're tired of sitting, your bellies are full, you might be getting a little tired. See if you can just really begin to notice and feel into what it is you are experiencing. And take a deep breath into whatever it is and welcome. Welcome. Stay one with that experience, even if it moves. I let go of the desire for security, affection, control. I let go of the desire to change what I'm experiencing. Welcome. Stay connected. I let go of the desire for security, affection, control. Welcome. Welcome. And when you're ready, you can come back to the front. What's happening? Anything happening?
So this time I felt peaceful, but which was very different from the first two times we did it. And so my question is, the first two times we did it, the feeling intensified and I just wanted to stop. So I'm in the middle of this place. What do you do with that? You're not always in a place where you can just ease into it and let go of that there and really feel that. So my question is, how do you deal with that part?
We deal with that part by trusting. My personal mantra in this journey is radical, invincible trust. That the one who's led me to it will lead me through it and will allow for myself to be given everything I need in the moment. Because what I'm with is my tears are sometimes the hardest thing for me to access, and I've generally had access them in business situations which were the last setting I ever wanted to. Or settings that I did not, you know, because, but tears are the gift of softening the heart. So I trust that if we really need it, it'll be provided however it looks. And what you described about welcoming is how it should be. Folks, this is what welcoming looks like. It's an energy current that sometimes it's high and sometimes it's low and sometimes it's tough and sometimes it's easy and sometimes it's tight. What the gift of welcoming does, it is allows the flow to continue. See, beforehand, under that repression or dumping, I had constrictions in the flow. So now the flow is open. So you never know what you get. Sometimes you just don't know. It might be laughter. It might be weeping. Because you brought up another huge point. I had the idea that if I did these practices right, I would never get sad, angry, afraid. Don't you have that kind of like, you'll just be zoom. You know, you'll just radiate, hum. You can't upset me, hum. And if you ever saw the Seinfeld episode, Serenity Now, Serenity Now, you know, and then you just... The beautiful part, and this is the gift in the teaching to me of Thomas Keating and Mary Murzowski and all those greats who've gone before me, they're real. They still have the emotions. But do you know how much science is telling us how long anger lasts? 30 seconds. Do you know most of us don't experience it for 30 seconds? Do we? Takes me 30 years to recognize I was angry and a couple years to be angry. and then before I'm willing to let go of the anger. Isn't that more my pattern? What they found is that the heart, 5 minutes of anger takes the heart muscle 6 hours to go back to normal rhythm. Well, I don't know about you, but 5 minutes is a pretty quick flash in the pan for me. So what these practices are beginning to do is just bring me back to where they're meant to be. Anger is necessary. It lets you know something is going on that you need to pay attention to. Fear is very helpful to let you know something is to be looked at, but you don't have to live there. See, we built houses and tents. We kind of got stuck in some of these. Grief, if your life partner dies or has something tragic happen, you're going to feel bad because you love. So this alive, living heart isn't meant to in any way not feel. What welcoming enables us to do is to allow the feelings to be the pure feelings. When I'm under the false self, whatever the situation is, triggers all my lifetime of unresolved issues with anger or guilt or fear or joy or pride. It's an all or nothing type thing. So instead of it being this, it becomes this. I had a dog die on me tragically. And Dublin was a great gift. He was a collie. And I was a professional at the time. I was a clinical social worker. I was an executive director of an agency. This dog dies, and I am wiped out. Now, I am dealing with pregnant and parenting teenage girls. Some of them lost a baby. One of them had a... they were big issues, you know? And this dog's death... He was antifreeze poisoning. No, but so it was very sudden and very, I couldn't function. And what I realized at that stage was all the grief that I could not grieve or did not allow myself to grieve was coming out in buckets. I mean, I couldn't talk. I was really incapacitated, and the gift of these prayer practices was, initially, I was doubly incapacitated because I was ashamed of how I was being. So the first thing that had to deal with was the fact of this crap. That was crap. Once that moved away, I saw that this dog, who was an angel in my life, was the gift because he broke through that and allowed some of the healing, really big hurts and healings, to happen. Because I couldn't hold it back anymore. So that's the gift that welcoming starts to do. That it's not that you lose it. I did it to... Okay, I'll tell you a story on Thomas. Something was going on and I was upset about it. Really upset. And there weren't many people to tell about it. And I told them. And I was out walking. Because I know now at least that this... We have to move our bodies with this energy, you know? So I was out walking like that, nighttime. And I had called somebody and just rah, 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 the whole thing. And it was something in contemplative outreach. So anyway, I called Thomas. And thank God, I was like, oh, thank you. Please give me the voicemail. Because I had to say something. It was that. And that's where my emotions, they pushed me into deal with things. And I hadn't wanted to deal with this issue, but I was being forced to. So I call and I get his voicemail. I think, thank God. And I say, I know I'm in an emotional reaction, but but I just, and don't call me, you know, you don't have to call me back, blah, blah, blah. It's nighttime. I mean, I would never call a monastery at night, but that's how it shows you. I was just out there flying around. So anyway, he did call back. I made it home. My beloved left me alone, just walking around. The phone rings, and it's Thomas. And he's like, what's going on? And I told him. And I watched. He spiked. It was beautiful to watch. It was like the gift in that taught me what I was upset about was something to be upset about. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
So I don't mean to communicate that if we do these practices, we won't be upset or there's nothing to correct. There was something to. What I noticed, though, was he spiked. But he came to his spike real fast and real, and he let it go. It was like came up, and then it went, and then it was just like, but it didn't last. It was like done. I've been walking for 2 hours now. So I mean I've been just churning it, right? You know, bringing it up, churning it, wrapping it around. How could they do this? Blah blah blah. Okay, so it settles. And because he let go of it, and I knew he did, it just was an energetic, it was the most amazing thing to witness. It's like, I guess I could let go of it too. Poof. So I did. It stuck with me. It took a little more because my body now at this point was like this. You know what I mean? I carried, the shoulders had gone, you name it, had tightened, and it was like, wow, maybe that's what it could be, that like, oops, and gone. And I don't know if he even knows the gift of the teaching was for me at almost 93 years old, who I really consider a spiritual giant on the planet right now. He's still human. Do you know what I mean? It's just that it's a blip. So I don't have to think about erasing your personality or not having any feelings or not getting. It's just that you don't have to carry it around so much or react to it.
One, I think of Jesus at the temple. It's all human emotion, and Jesus had righteous anger. He was angry, but I don't think for the rest of the day Jesus was griping to the disciples, "You believe that?"
Exactly. No, I looked, because that was just the passage I was with. Mm-hmm. He was angry and had a grieved heart, or his heart grieved. Yeah. That it's true that one of the things that somehow got mixed up in the message was that as Christians we should erase some of these emotions. Okay, no fear, no anger. Well, sorrow's okay, not too much grief. You know, that a few of them we got to pick and choose. And we don't. This is the human condition, but it changes our relationship with them, and they have a purpose. And once you see the purpose, which Jesus claimed and told them, it was done.
My question is, in the 12 steps you're taught, if you get, you work the steps for long enough, you get to the point where you detach in love. I'm really stuck there right now thinking, how do you reconcile those two? Because they're basically saying if you're going to be healthy emotionally, you need how to detach in love. But what you're saying is you really have to own the feelings. So how do you reconcile those two different mindsets? I'm a little...
Because that's a great question, Tish. In my journey, I want to detach in love, but here's how I want to detach in love. Okay. I don't want to get muddy. Do you know what I mean? It's like, yeah, I want it clean and tidy. I'm detached. That's not life. Life is, I love that commercial, life is messy, clean it up. It's being real. It's like the analogy I give is the Velveteen Rabbit. You get loved so much, your nose gets all smushed off because it's real. But the purpose is detachment, but detachment in love. So if you have, let's say, a child going through an extremely bad space, does your heart hurt like hell? Yes, because you love so much. Now the detachment is, do you go in and rescue them?
No.
I hope you don't. Mary used to say with her kids, she tells a big story. She loved them way too much to interfere with their lives. You love them so much, you're not going to get in there. I love you. Of course I'm not going to rescue you, honey. I love you. Because what that communicates is, I believe in you. You can handle this. I love you. Do you hurt? Yes. The detachment, as I see it, is keeping your hands off it. it doesn't mean that your heart's not just absolutely going through all of the vicissitudes. When I hear some of the stories, there's nothing I can do but weep. Because that's the appropriate thing to do when you hear this. But the difference is, joy can be around the corner. That you can still live your life or see beauty and see goodness. And so that's a paradox. I don't know if it makes sense. But it's fully into, to be really alive and really, in this form anyways, we are human. So we detach in love and we really clean up our behavior. But the feelings that go along with it, welcoming helps me own the feeling, and then it doesn't have the power anymore. When I shared last night, I did that inventory on jealousy and envy. All of a sudden, I saw them, and it was like, wow, there you are. But they weren't, you know, before they were pushing me along because I was blinded to them, and they were really involving... All I can say is the relationships, especially with the two people they were directed towards, have changed 100%. And I never went up to them and said, do you know I was very envious and jealous of you? I didn't do that. But I owned it, and I surrendered it, and I asked God, because what the steps teach us is we ask God to remove our shortcomings. We don't. And that's what welcoming does. It says, if you want to remove this, you can have it. But if you want me to keep it, it's there too. That's what that last one says. I'm going to trust you to do with it what you need to do. What I'm saying is, I see it and it looks kind of like a messy problem to me. But I'll trust your judgment. But you talked about attachment and aversion. This Gerald May's book, Addiction and Grace, does a wonderful job in this. And one of the things we have in the West is detachment. Like if I told you the most detached person in the world is walking in the door, what would you think?
Arrogant.
What are some of the other things you'd think?
Asshole.
Passive, cold, caring, unfeeling. We have a very negative connotation of those words. An attachment, if I said to you, I'm very attached to you, it's generally kind of a warm fuzzy, isn't it? But the root of the word attachment is attaché from French, and it means nailed to. So the next time you want to be attached to someone, picture yourself nailed to them. So when we let go and detach, all we're doing is giving freedom to the relationship. That's what we're doing. When I'm nailed to you, I have no freedom. I go where you go, you know, that whole piece. Now, aversion is the other piece of this. That some of us have big attachments. We also usually have big aversions. Like, I'm not going there, no matter, But if you notice, my hand goes the same way with both of them. If I have an aversion, I'm like this. If I'm nailed to something, I'm like that. Welcoming deals on both sides, because if it's an aversion or if it's an attachment, you've lost your freedom. What these prayers do is they give you back the freedom to choose in love what the next thing to do is. And here's the really good news. You don't even have to know that, because you trust that God will prompt you with the next right thing to do. If you're faithful to these prayer practices, that's what it's all about. You know that sudden intuition that you have? I better call somebody. You forgot about it and you did your sit and you get up and you think, no, I really... And you call them and you say, oh my... They say, wow, I needed to hear your voice. You know all those little ways that God's like... He's managing our lives, but we think we're doing it. So the more freedom we allow, where we're not so predetermined, we allow grace to start to move through us to do what needs to be done. And welcoming is totally at the service of that. so that those promptings of the Spirit have the freedom to move through you. They might be up, they might be down, they might be tears, they might be fear, they might be happy, they might be lust. It doesn't matter because you're not staying there. They're just passing through. That's what they found, that the emotional range, which is 30 to 90 seconds, goes like that. The trouble is most of us don't go like that. We've fixated and built whole personalities around some of those, either identifying with them or avoiding them. What I'm just encountering in my own life are some people that have to be nice in every circumstance. And I don't know what God's doing with them, but there are a few in my life, and my trouble is I want to hit them. It's an awful thing. No, I mean, really, you just want to, like, come on, think one bad thought, just once. Because, like, where are you? If everything is, oh, it's so wonderful, you know, it's just, I want to shake them. So what the lesson is for me hasn't yet been revealed, but what I'm aware of is this personality type has come up in my life, and it's one of those things that I'm bumping into it in a few different places. But that's what the teaching is. If you don't want to learn the lesson here, go change circumstance, and don't you find that the same lesson comes? Maybe a different package, but it's like, same lesson. Okay, let's try here. And that's what the welcoming is at the service of. Don't you want to learn the lesson? So listen to what Teilhard de Chardin said. Above all, trust in the slow work of God. We are quite naturally impatient in everything to reach the end without delay. We would like to skip the intermediate stages. We are impatient of being on the way to something unknown, something new. And yet it is the law of all progress that it is made by passing through some stages of instability, and that may take a very long time. And so I think it is with you. Your ideas mature gradually. Let them grow. Let them shape themselves without undue haste. Don't try to force on them as though you could be today what in time, that is to say, with grace and circumstances acting for your goodwill, will make of you tomorrow. Only God could say what this new spirit gradually forming in you will be. Give the Lord the benefit of believing that his hand is leading you, and accept the anxiety of feeling yourself in suspense and incomplete. So these are meant to kind of rattle our cage and shake our foundation a little bit. Not too much, but just those periods of instability. And if you're not feeling the ground of your being getting deeper roots, that's when you look at it. What I experienced through centering prayer is what happens is you start to get rooted in a soil that is deeper. Even if the hurricanes are blowing up here, there's something different in the roots of your being. So the instability of the growth is what welcoming helps you walk through. So any questions before we break for prayer?
It's not really a question. I was trying to put a handle on. If someone was to say to me, well, what did you do? What is welcoming prayer? And I wanted to put a thumbprint on the whole talk. To me, it's an aggregate of everything. But I wrote this down, and tell me if I'm... got it, or I don't have it. True security is only found in God. There is not enough out there to take care of yourself. We must work more through our needs. So if I was to put a thumbnail, it's a prayer that lets us understand through the aggregate of everything you've been saying that really this security, affection, and control the true security is only found in God. And that would be probably the crux of the prayer. I don't know if I hit it on the head, but I'm going to try. You know, people are going to ask me, what was it about? And I'm going to tell them, basically, if you want to take it, I says there's a lot in between what I just said, but that's it.
I'm struggling a little bit with the last sentence. I let go of the desire to change what I am experiencing. So we're letting go of the desire to change the feeling, not necessarily the thing that's happening.
Correct. Let's face it. Nobody would be sitting in this chair if we didn't want to change a heck of a lot of things. And that's what led me to centering prayer in the first place. Than these supportive practices. So do we want to change desperately? But out of the love of God, would you be willing not to change if God were using you as needed to be done right now? Yes. So what I'm letting go of is my interior experience of what is happening. And if I need to have an impact on what is happening, that'll come. But it'll come out of a different energy. Real quickly, at the end of a presentation in Tampa, a woman listened to the whole day, and she was giving me bad looks from the back the whole time, really bad looks. And her husband was next to her in a wheelchair, and at the very end, literally, like right now, except it was the end of the day, she said, "So you're telling me to welcome the fact that he's dying of cancer?" And she looked at him. And I said, "No, but if you don't let go of the anger you feel about the fact that he's dying of cancer, you are missing the relationship with him while he is dying of cancer." If you can get it, it's harsh, but that's it. So it's not what's happening, it's what you're doing with what's happening. And sometimes she was so angry that he was leaving her, she left him. Did you see that? He was still there. And he had such a peaceful countenance, but she couldn't bear it. So welcoming doesn't mean it's easy, but it sure means there's a different way of being. The difference between pain and suffering, that's what we'll do after prayer.